clean nor heavy. Shapely, Reacher thought. An old-fashioned word, but the right one. She was wearing sneakers with tiny white socks that ended below her ankles. She had a bag. It was beside her on the bench. Not a purse, not a suitcase, a messenger bag, gray nylon with a broad flap. She was the one he was waiting for. He knew that because as he watched her in his peripheral vision, he could see her watching him in hers. She was sizing him up and deciding whether to approach. Deciding against, apparently. She had had a full 15 minutes to make her decision, but she hadn't gotten up and walked over. Not because of good manners. Not because she hadn't wanted to disturb him while he was eating. He suspected her concept of etiquette didn't quite stretch that far. And even if it did, then a missing boyfriend would have overwhelmed it. She just didn't want to get involved with him. That was all. Reacher didn't blame her. "Look at yourself," Vaughn had said. "What do you see?" He had no illusions about what the girl three booths away was seeing. No illusions about his appearance or his appeal in the eyes of someone like her. It was late at night. She was looking at an old guy, twice her age. Huge, untidy, disheveled, somewhat dirty, and surrounded by an electric stay-away aura he had spent years cultivating, like a sign on the rear end of a fire truck, "Stay back 200 feet." So she was going to sit tight and wait him out. That was clear. He was disappointed, primarily because of the questions surrounding the dead boy in the dark, but also because, in a small corner of his mind, he would have liked to be the kind of guy that pretty girls could walk up to. Not that he would have taken it anywhere. She was wholesome, and he was twice her age. And her boyfriend was dead, which made her some kind of a widow. She was still watching him. He had moved his gaze so that he could see her reflection in the window next to her. She was looking up, looking down, kneading her fingers, glancing suddenly in his direction as new thoughts came to her, and then glancing away again as she resolved them, as she found reasons to stay well away from him. He gave it 5 more minutes, and then fished in his pocket for cash. He didn't need a check. He knew what the sandwich and the coffee cost, because the prices had been printed on the menu. He knew what the local sales tax percentage was, and he was capable of calculating it for himself in his head. He knew how to work out a 15% tip for the college-age waitress who had also stayed well away from him. He folded small bills lengthwise and left them on the table, got up and headed for the door. At the last minute he changed direction and stepped over to the young woman's booth and slid in opposite her. "My name is Reacher," he said. "I think you wanted to talk to me." The girl looked at him and blinked and opened her mouth and closed it again and spoke at the second attempt. She said,
"Why would you think that?"
"I met a cop called Vaughn," she told me.
"Told you what?"
"That you were looking for someone who had been to despair."
"You're mistaken," the girl said. "It wasn't me."
She wasn't a great liar. Not great at all. Reacher had come up against some real experts in his previous life. This one had all the tells on display. The gulps, the false starts, the stammers, the fidgets, the glances to her right. Psychologists figured that the memory center was located in the left brain and the imagination engine in the right brain. Therefore, people unconsciously glanced to the left when they were remembering things and to the right when they were making stuff up. When they were lying. This girl was glancing right so much she was in danger of getting whiplash. "Okay," Reacher said. "I apologize for disturbing you." But he didn't move. He stayed where he was, sitting easy, filling most of a vinyl bench made for two. Up close, the girl was prettier than she had looked from a distance. She had a dusting of freckles and a mobile, expressive mouth.
Who are you?
She asked. Just a guy, Reacher said.
What kind of a guy?
Well, the judge in despair called me a vagrant, so I'm that kind of a guy, I guess.
No job?
Not for a long time. She said,
They called me a vagrant, too.
Her accent was unspecific. She wasn't from Boston or New York or Chicago or Minnesota or the Deep South. Maybe somewhere in the Southwest. Arizona, perhaps. He said, In your case, I imagine they were inaccurate.
I'm not sure of the definition, exactly.
It comes from the old French word, vaucrain, Reacher said, meaning one who wanders idly from place to place without lawful or visible means of support.
I'm in college.
So you were unfairly accused.
They just wanted me out of there.
Where do you go to school? She paused, glanced to her right.
Miami?
Reacher nodded. Wherever she went to school, it wasn't Miami. Probably wasn't anywhere in the East. Was probably somewhere on the West Coast. Southern California, possibly. Unskilled liars like her often picked a mirror image when lying about geography. What's your major? He asked. She looked straight at him and said,
The history of the 20th century?
Which was probably true. Young people usually told the truth about their areas of expertise because they were proud of them, and they were worried about getting caught out on alternatives. Often they didn't have alternatives. Being young, it came with the territory. Feels like yesterday to me, he said, not history.
What does?
The 20th century. She didn't reply, didn't understand what he meant. She remembered maybe 8 or 9 years of the old century, maximum, and from a kid's perspective. He remembered slightly more of it. What's your name? He asked. She glanced to her right.
Anne?
Reacher nodded again. Whatever her name was, it wasn't Anne. Anne was probably a sister's name, or a best friend's, or a cousin's. Generally, people liked to stay close to home with phony names. The girl who wasn't called Anne asked,
Were you unfairly accused?
Reacher shook his head. A vagrant is exactly what I am.
Why did you go there?
I liked the name. Why did you go there? She didn't answer. He said, Anyway, it wasn't much of a place.
How much of it did you see?
Most of it, the second time.
You went back?
I took a good look around from a distance.
And
it still wasn't much of a place. The girl went quiet. Reacher saw her weighing her next question, how to ask it, whether to ask it. She put her head on one side and looked beyond him.
Did you see any people?
Lots of people.
Did you see the airplane?
I heard one.
It belongs to the guy with the big house. Every night he takes off at 7 and comes back at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Reacher asked, How long were you there?
One day.
So how do you know the plane flies every night? She didn't answer. Maybe someone told you, Reacher said. No reply. No law against joyriding.
People don't joyride at night. There's nothing to see.
Good point. The girl was quiet for another minute, and then she asked,
Were you in a cell?
A couple of hours.
Anyone else in there?
No.
When you went back, what people did you see?
Why don't you just show me his picture?
Whose picture?
Your boyfriend's.
Why would I do that?
Your boyfriend is missing, as in you can't find him. That was Officer Vaughn's impression, anyway.
You trust cops?
Some of them.
I don't have a picture.
You've got a big bag, Probably all kinds of things in there. Maybe a few pictures.
Show me your wallet.
I don't have a wallet.
Everyone has a wallet.
Not me.
Prove it.
I can't prove a negative.
Empty your pockets.
Reacher nodded. He understood. The boyfriend is some kind of a fugitive. She asked about my job. She needs to know I'm not an investigator. An investigator would have compromising ID in his wallet. He lifted his butt off the bench and dug out his cash, his old passport, his ATM card, his motel key. His toothbrush was in his room, assembled, standing upright in a plastic glass next to the sink. The girl looked at his stuff and said,
"Thanks."
He said, "Now show me his picture."
"He's not my boyfriend."
"Isn't he?"
"He's my husband."
"You're young to be married."
"We're in love."
"You're not wearing a ring?" Her left hand was on the table. She withdrew it quickly into her lap, but there had been no ring on her finger and no tan line.
"It was kind of sudden, kind of hurried. We figured we'd get rings later."
"Isn't it a part of the ceremony?"
"No, that's a myth. I'm not pregnant either, just in case that's what you're thinking."
"Not for a minute."
"Good."
"Show me the picture." She hauled the gray messenger bag into her lap and rooted around for a moment and came out with a fat leather wallet. There was a billfold part straining against a little strap and a change purse part. There was a plastic window on the outside with a California driver's license behind it with her picture on it. She unpopped the little strap and opened the billfold and riffled through a concertina of plastic photograph windows, slid a slim fingertip into one of them and eased a snapshot out. She passed it across the table. It had been cut down out of a standard 6x4 one-hour print. The edges were not entirely straight. It showed the girl standing on a street with golden light and palm trees and a row of neat boutiques behind her. She was smiling widely, vibrant with love and joy and happiness, leaning forward a little as if her whole body was clenching with the onset of uncontrollable giggles. She was in the arms of a guy about her age. He was very tall and blonde and heavy, an athlete. He had blue eyes and a buzz cut and a dark tan and a wide smile. "This is your husband?" Reacher asked. The girl said,
"Yes."
Chapter 15. Reacher squared the snapshot on the tabletop in front of him, looked at the girl across from him, and asked,
"How old is this photo?" "Recent."
"May I see your driver's license?"
"Why?"
"Something I need to check."
"I don't know."
"I already know your name isn't Anne. I know you don't go to school in Miami. My guess would be UCLA. This photograph looks like it was taken somewhere around there. It has that L.A. kind of feel." The girl said nothing. Reacher said, "I'm not here to hurt you." She paused and then slid her wallet across the table. He glanced at her license. Most of it was visible behind the milky plastic window. Her name was Lucy Anderson. No middle name. Anderson. Hence, Anne, perhaps.
"Lucy, I'm pleased to meet you." "I'm sorry about not telling you the truth."
"Don't worry about it." "Why should you?"
"My friends call me Lucky. Like a mispronunciation. Like a nickname."
"I hope you always are."
"Me too. I have been so far."
Her license said she was coming up to 20 years old. It said her address was an apartment on a street he knew to be close to the main UCLA campus. He had been in L.A. not long before. Its geography was still familiar to him. Her sex was specified as female, which was clearly accurate, and her eyes were listed as blue, which was an understatement. She was 5 feet 8 inches tall. which made her husband at least 6'4", maybe 6'5". He towered over her. He was huge. He looked to be well over 200 pounds, maybe Reacher's own size, maybe even bigger. His arms were as thick as the palm trunks behind him. Not the guy in the dark. Not even close. Way too big. The guy in the dark had been Lucy Anderson's size. Reacher slid the wallet back across the table, followed it with the photograph. Lucy Anderson asked,
"Did you see him?"
Reacher shook his head. "No, I didn't. I'm sorry."
"He has to be there somewhere."
"What's he running from?" She looked to the right.
"Why would he be running from something?"
"Just a wild guess."
"Who are you?"
"Just a guy."
"How did you know my name wasn't Ann? How did you know I'm not in school in Miami?"
"A long time ago, I was a cop in the military. I still know things." Her skin whitened behind her freckles. She fumbled the photograph back into its slot and fastened the wallet and thrust it deep into her bag. "You don't like cops, do you?"
"Not always."
"That's unusual for a person like you."
"Like me?"
"Safe, secure, middle class, well brought up."
"Things change."
"What did your husband do?" She didn't answer. "And who did he do it to?" No answer. "Why did he go to despair?" No response. "Were you supposed to meet him there?" Nothing. "Doesn't matter anyway," Reacher said. "I didn't see him. And I'm not a cop anymore. Haven't been for a long time."
"What would you do now, if you were me?"
"I'd wait right here in town. Your husband looks like a capable guy. He'll probably show up, sooner or later, or get word to you."
"I hope so."
"Is he in school, too?"
Lucy Anderson didn't answer that, just secured the flap of her bag and slid off the bench sideways and stood up and tugged the hem of her skirt down. 5'8", maybe 130, blonde and blue, straight, strong and healthy.
"Thank you. Good night."
"Good luck, Lucky."
She hoisted her bag on her shoulder and walked to the door and pushed out to the street. He watched her huddle into her sweatshirt and step away through the cold. He was in bed before 2 o'clock in the morning. The motel room was warm. There was a heater under the window, and it was blasting away to good effect. He set the alarm in his head for 6:30. He was tired, but he figured 4.5 hours would be enough. In fact, they would have to be enough, because he wanted time to shower before heading out for breakfast. Chapter 16. It was a cliché that cops stop in at diners for donuts before, during, and after every shift, but clichés were clichés only because they were so often true. Therefore, Reacher slipped into the same back booth at 5 to 7 in the morning and fully expected to see Officer Vaughn enter inside the following 10 minutes, which she did. He saw her cruiser pull up and park outside, saw her climb out onto the sidewalk and press both hands into the small of her back and stretch, saw her lock up and pirouette and head for the door. She came in and saw him, and paused for a long moment, and then changed direction and slid in opposite him. He asked, "Strawberry, vanilla, or chocolate? That's all I got."
"Of what?"
"Milkshakes."
"I don't drink breakfast with jerks."
"I'm not a jerk. I'm a citizen with a problem. You're here to help. Says so on the badge."
"What kind of problem?"
"The girl found me."
"And had you seen her boyfriend?"
"Her husband, actually."
"Really? Huh. She's young to be married."
I thought so, too. She said they're in love.
Cue the violins. So had you seen him?
No.
So, where's your problem?
I saw someone else.
Who?
Not saw, actually. It was in the pitch dark. I fell over him.
Who?
A dead guy.
Where?
On the way out of despair.
Are you sure?
Completely. A young adult male corpse.
Are you serious?
Has a heart attack.
Why didn't you tell me last night?
I wanted time to think about it.
You're yanking my chain. There's what out there? 1,000 square miles? And you just happen to trip over a dead guy in the dark? That's a coincidence as big as a barn.
Not really, Reacher said. I figure he was doing the same thing I was doing. Walking east from despair to hope. Staying close enough to the road to be sure of his direction, far enough away to be safe. That put him in a pretty specific channel. I might have missed him by a yard, but I was never going to miss him by a mile. Vaughn said nothing. But he didn't make it all the way. I think he was exhausted. His knees were driven pretty deep in the sand. I think he fell on his knees and pitched forward on his front and died. He was emaciated and dehydrated. No wounds. No trauma.
What? You autopsied this guy in the dark?
I felt around.
Felt?
Touch, Reacher said. It's one of the 5 senses we rely on.
So who was this guy?
Caucasian, by the feel of his hair. Maybe 5'8", 140. Young. No ID. I don't know if he was dark or fair.
This is unbelievable.
It happened.
Where exactly?
Maybe 4 miles out of town, 8 miles short of the line.
Definitely in despair, then.
No question.
You should call the Despair PD.
I wouldn't piss on the Despair PD if it was on fire.
Well, I can't help you. It's not my jurisdiction. The waitress came over.
The day shift woman. The witness to the coffee marathon. She was busy and harassed. The diner was filling up fast. Small town America at breakfast time. Reacher ordered coffee and eggs. Vaughn ordered coffee, too.
Reacher took that as a good sign.
He waited until the waitress had bustled away and said, "You can help me." Vaughn said,
"How?"
"I want to go back and take a look, right now in the daylight. You can drive me. We could be in and out real fast."
"It's not my town?"
"Unofficial. Off duty, like a tourist. You're a citizen. You're entitled to drive on their road."
"Would you be able to find the place again?"
"I left a pile of stones on the shoulder."
"I can't do it,"
Vaughn said.
"I can't poke around over there. And I sure as hell can't take you there. You've been excluded. It would be unbelievably provocative."
"Nobody would know."
"You think? They've got 1 road in and 1 road out and 2 cars.
Right now they're eating donuts in their restaurant."
"You sure you didn't dream this?"
"No dreaming involved. The kid had eyeballs like marbles and the inside of his mouth was parched like shoe leather. He had been wandering for days." The waitress came back with the coffee and the eggs. The eggs had a sprig of fresh parsley arrayed across them. Reacher picked it off and laid it on the side of the plate. Vaughn said,
"I can't drive a Hope police cruiser in despair."
"So what else have you got?" She was quiet for a long moment. She sipped her coffee. Then she said,
"I have an old truck."
She made him wait on the 1st Street sidewalk near the hardware store. Clearly, she wasn't about to take him home while she changed her clothes and her vehicle. A wise precaution, he thought. "Look at yourself," she had said. "What do you see?" He was getting accustomed to negative answers to that question. The hardware store was still closed. The window was full of tools and small consumer items. The aisle behind the door was piled high with the stuff that would be put out on the sidewalk later. For many years, Reacher had wondered why hardware stores favored sidewalk displays. There was a lot of work involved, repetitive physical labor twice a day. But maybe consumer psychology dictated that large, utilitarian items sold better when associated with the rugged outdoors. Or maybe it was just a question of space. He thought for a moment, and came to no firm conclusion, and moved away and leaned on a pole that supported a crosswalk sign. The morning had come in cold and gray. Thin clouds started at ground level. The Rockies weren't visible at all, neither near nor far. Close to 20 minutes later, an old Chevrolet pickup truck pulled up on the opposite curb. Not a bulbous old classic from the '40s, or a swooping space-age design from the '50s, or a muscly El Camino from the '60s, just a plain, second-hand American vehicle about 15 years old, worn navy blue paint, steel rims, small tires. Vaughn was at the wheel. She was wearing a red windbreaker zipped to the chin and a khaki ball cap pulled low. A good disguise. Reacher wouldn't have recognized her if he hadn't been expecting her. He used the crosswalk and climbed in next to her, onto a small vinyl seat with an upright back. The cab smelled of leaked gasoline and cold exhaust. There were rubber floor mats under his feet, covered with desert dust, worn and papery with age. He slammed the door, and Vaughn took off again. The truck had a wheezy four-cylinder motor. In and out real fast, he had said, but clearly fast was going to be a relative concept. They covered Hope's 5 miles of road in 7 minutes. 100 yards short of the line, Vaughn said,
"We see anybody at all, you duck down."
Then she pressed harder on the gas, and the expansion joint thumped under the wheels, and the tires set up a harsh roar over Despair's sharp stones. "You come here much?" Reacher asked.
"Why would I?"
Vaughn said. There was no traffic ahead, nothing either coming or going. The road speared straight into the hazy distance, rising and falling. Vaughn was holding the truck at a steady 60, a mile a minute, probably close to its comfortable maximum. 7 minutes inside enemy territory, she started to slow. "Watch the left shoulder," Reacher said. 4 stones piled up. The weather had settled to a luminous gray light, not bright, not sunny, but everything was illuminated perfectly. No glare, no shadows. There was some trash on the shoulder. Not much, but enough that Reacher's small cairn was not going to stand out in glorious isolation like a beacon. There were plastic water bottles, glass beer bottles, soda cans, paper, small unimportant parts of vehicles, all caught on a long ridge of pebbles that had been washed to the side of the road by the passage of tires. Reacher twisted around in his seat. Nobody behind, nobody ahead. Vaughn slowed some more. Reacher scanned the shoulder. The stones had felt big and obvious in his hands, in the dark. But now, in the impersonal daylight, they were going to look puny in the vastness. "There," Reacher said. He saw his little cairn 30 yards ahead on the left. 3 stones butted together, the 4th balanced on top. A speck in the distance, in the middle of nowhere. To the south, the land ran all the way to the horizon, flat and essentially featureless, dotted with pale bushes and dark rocks, and pitted with washholes and low ridges.
"This is the place?" Vaughn asked.
20-some yards due south, Reacher said. He checked the road again. Nothing ahead, nothing behind. "We're okay," he said. Vaughn passed the cairn and pulled to the right shoulder and turned a wide circle across both lanes, came back east and stopped exactly level with the stones. She put the transmission in park and left the engine running.
Stay here, she said.
Bullshit, Reacher said. He got out and stepped over the stones and waited on the shoulder. He felt tiny in the lit-up vastness. In the dark, the world had shrunk to an arm's length around him. Now it felt huge again. Vaughn stepped alongside him, and he walked south with her through the scrub, at a right angle to the road. 5 paces, 10, 15. He stopped after 20 paces, and confirmed his direction by glancing behind him. Then he stood still, and checked all around, first on a close radius, and then wider. He saw nothing. He stood on tiptoe, and craned his neck and searched. There was nothing there. Chapter 17 Reacher turned a careful 180 and stared back at the road to make sure he hadn't drifted too far, either west or east. He hadn't. He was right on target. He walked 5 paces south, turned east, walked 5 more paces, turned around, walked 10 steps west, saw nothing.
Well? Vaughn called.
It's gone.
You were just yanking my chain.
I wasn't. Why would I?
How accurate could you have been, with the stones, in the dark?
That's what I'm wondering. Vaughn walked a small, quiet circle all around, shook her head.
It isn't here, if it ever was.
Reacher stood still in the emptiness, nothing to see, nothing to hear, except Vaughn's truck idling patiently 20 yards away. He walked 10 more yards east and started to trace a wide circle. A quarter of the way through it, he stopped.
Look here.
He pointed at the ground, at a long line of shallow, crumbled, oval pits in the sand, each one a yard apart. Vaughn said,
Footprints.
My footprints, Reacher said, from last night, heading home.
They turned west and backtracked, followed the trail of his old footprints back toward despair. 10 yards later, they came to the head of a small, diamond-shaped clearing. The clearing was empty.
Wait, Reacher said.
It's not here.
But it was here. This is the spot.
The crusted sand was all churned up by multiple disturbances. There were dozens of footprints facing in all directions. There were scrapes and slides and drag marks. There were small depressions in the scrub, some fairly precise, but most not, because of the way the dry sand had crumbled and trickled down into the holes.
Reacher said, Tell me what you see.
Activity, Vaughn said. A mess.
A story, Reacher said. It's telling us what happened.
Whatever happened, we can't stay here. This was supposed to be in and out, real fast.
Reacher stood up straight and scanned the road, west and east. Nothing there.
Nobody coming.
I should have brought a picnic, Vaughn said.
Reacher stepped into the clearing, crouched down, and pointed two-fingered at a pair of neat, parallel depressions in the center of the space, like 2 coconut shells had been pressed down into the sand, hard, on a north-south axis.
The boy's knees, he said. This is where he gave it up. He staggered to a stop and half-turned and fell over.
Then he pointed to a broad, messed-up, stony area 4 feet to the east.
This is where I landed after I tripped over him, on these stones. I could show you the bruises if you like.
Maybe later. We need to get going.
Reacher pointed to 4 sharp impressions in the sand. Each one was a rectangle about 2 inches by 3, at the corners of a larger rectangle about 2 feet by 5.
Gurney feet, he said. Folks came by and collected him. Maybe 4 or 5 of them, judging by all the footprints. Official folks, because who else carries gurneys?
He stood up and checked, and pointed north and west along a broad, ragged line of footprints and crushed vegetation.
They came in that way and carried him back out in the same direction, back to the road. Maybe to a coroner's wagon, parked a little ways west of my cairn.
So we're okay,
Vaughn said. The proper authorities have got him. Problem solved.
We should get going?
Reacher nodded vaguely and gazed due west. What should we see over there?
Two sets of incoming footprints, Vaughn said.
The boys and yours, both heading east out of town. Separated by time, but not much separated by direction. But it looks like there's more than that. They skirted the clearing and formed up again west of it. They saw four separate lines of footprints fairly close together. Two incoming, two outgoing, Reacher said.
How do you know?
The angles. Most people walk with their toes out. The newer of the incoming tracks showed big dents in the sand a yard or more apart, and deep. The older showed smaller dents, closer together, less regular and shallower. The kid and me, Reacher said, heading east, separated in time. I was walking, he was stumbling and staggering. The two outgrowing tracks were both brand new. The sand was less crumbled, and therefore the indentations were more distinct, and fairly deep, fairly well spaced, and similar. Reasonably big guys, Reacher said, heading back west. Recently, not separated in time.
What does it mean?
It means they're tracking the kid, or me, or both of us, finding out where we'd been, where we'd come from.
Why?
They found the body. They were curious.
How did they find the body in the first place?
Buzzards. It's the obvious way on open ground. Vaughn stood still for a moment, then she said,
Back to the truck. Right now.
Reacher didn't argue. She had beaten him to the obvious conclusion, but only by a heartbeat. Chapter 18. The old Chevy was still idling, patiently. The road was still empty. But they ran. They ran, and they flung the truck's doors open and dumped themselves inside. Vaughn slammed the transmission into gear and hit the gas. They didn't say a word until they thumped back over the Hope town line 8 long minutes later.
Now you're really a citizen with a problem, Vaughn said, aren't you? The despair cops might be dumb, but they're still cops. Buzzards show them a dead guy. They find the dead guy's tracks. They find a second set of tracks that shows some other guy caught up with the dead guy along the way. They find signs of a whole lot of falling down and rolling around. They're going to want a serious talk with the other guy. You can bet on that.
So why didn't they follow my tracks forward?
Because they know where you were going. There's only Hope or Kansas. They want to know where you started. And what are they going to find?
A massive loop, buried power bar wrappers, and empty water bottles if they look hard enough. Vaughn nodded at the wheel.
Clear physical evidence of a big guy with big feet and long legs, who paid a planned clandestine visit the night after they threw a big guy with big feet and long legs out of town.
Plus one of the deputies saw me.
You sure?
We talked.
Terrific.
The dead guy died of natural causes.
You sure? You felt around in the dark. They're going to put that boy in a slab.
I'm not in despair anymore. You can't go there, they can't come here.
Small departments don't work homicides, you idiot. We call in the state police, and the state police can go anywhere in Colorado, and the state police get cooperation anywhere in Colorado. And you're in my logbook from yesterday. I couldn't deny it, even if I wanted to.
You wouldn't want to?
I don't know anything about you, except that I'm pretty sure you beat on a deputy in despair. You practically admitted that to me. Who knows what else you did?
I didn't do anything else.
Vaughn said nothing.
Reacher asked, What happens next?
Always better to get out in front of a thing like this. You should call in and volunteer information.
No.
Why not?
I was a soldier. I never volunteer for anything.
Well, I can't help you.
It's out of my hands. It was never in my hands.
You could call, Reacher said. You could call the state police and find out what their thinking is.
Oh, they'll be calling us soon enough.
So let's get out in front, like you said. Early information is always good.
Vaughn didn't reply to that, just lifted off the gas and slowed as they hit the edge of town. The hardware guy had his door open and was piling his stuff on the sidewalk. He had some kind of a trick stepladder that could be put in about 8 different positions. He had set it up like a painter's platform, good for reaching second-story walls. Vaughn made a right on the next block, and then a left, past the back of the diner. The streets were broad and pleasant, and the sidewalks had trees. She pulled into a marked-off parking space outside a low brick building. The building could have been a suburban post office, but it wasn't. It was the Hope Police Department. It said so, in aluminum letters neatly fixed to the brick. Vaughn shut off the engine, and Reacher followed her down a neat brick path to the police station's door. The door was locked. The station was closed. Vaughn used a key from her bunch and said,
"The desk guy gets in at 9.
Inside, the place still looked like a post office. Dull, worn, institutional, bureaucratic, but somewhat friendly, accessible, oriented toward service. There was a public inquiry counter and a space behind it with 2 desks, a watch commander's office behind a solid door in the same corner a postmaster's would be. Vaughn stepped past the counter and headed for a desk that was clearly hers, efficient and organized but not intimidating. There was an old model computer front and center, and a console telephone next to it. She opened a drawer and found a number in a book. Clearly, contact between the Hope PD and the state police was rare. She didn't know the number by heart. She dialed the phone and asked for the duty desk and identified herself and said,
"We have a missing person inquiry?"
"Male, Caucasian, approximately 20 years of age, 5'8", 140.
Can you help us with that?"
Then she listened briefly, and her eyes flicked left and then right, and she said,
"We don't have a name."
She was asked another question, and she glanced right and said,
"Can't tell if he's dark or fair. We're working from a black-and-white photograph. It's all we have."
Then there was a pause. Reacher saw her yawn. She was tired. She had been working all night. She moved the phone a little ways from her ear, and Reacher heard the faint tap of a keyboard in the distant state office. Denver, maybe, or Colorado Springs. Then a voice came back on, and Vaughn clamped the phone tight, and Reacher didn't hear what it had to say. Vaughn listened, then said,
"Thank you."
Then she hung up.
"Nothing to report. Apparently despair didn't call it in."
"Natural causes," Reacher said. "They agreed with me." Vaughn shook her head.
"They should have called it in anyway. An unexplained death out in open country? That's at least a county matter, which means it would show up on the state police system about a minute later."
"So why didn't they call it in?"
"I don't know. But that's not our problem."
Reacher sat down at the other desk. It was a plain, government-issue piece of furniture with steel legs and a thin 6x3 fiberboard top laminated with a printed plastic approximation of rosewood or koa. There was a modesty panel and a 3-drawer pedestal bolted to the right-hand legs. The chair had wheels and was covered with gray tweed fabric. Military police furniture had been different. The chairs had been covered with vinyl. The desks had been steel. Reacher had sat behind dozens of them all over the world. The views from his windows had been dramatically different, but the desks had been all the same. Their contents, too. Files full of dead people and missing people. Some mourned, some not. He thought of Lucy Anderson, called Lucky by her friends, the night before in the diner.
He recalled the way she had wrung her hands. He looked across at Vaughn and said, "It is our problem." "Kind of. The kid might have people worried about him." Vaughn nodded, went back to her book. Reacher saw her flip forward from C for Colorado State Police to D for Despair Police Department. She dialed, and he heard a loud reply in her ear, as if physical proximity made for more powerful electrical current in the wires. She ran through the same faked inquiry. Missing person. Caucasian male, about 20, 5'8", 140, no name, coloring unclear because of a monochrome photograph. There was a short pause, and then a short reply. Vaughn hung up.
"Nothing to report. They never saw such a guy."
Chapter 19. Reacher sat quiet, and Vaughn moved stuff around on her desk. She put her keyboard in line with her monitor, and put her mouse in line with her keyboard, and squared her phone behind it, and then adjusted everything, until all the edges were either parallel or at perfect right angles to each other. Then she put pencils away in drawers, and flicked at dust and crumbs with the edge of her palm.
"The gurney marks."
"I know. Apart from them, I could have invented this whole thing."
"If they were gurney marks."
"What else could they have been?"
"Nothing, I guess. They were from one of those old-fashioned stretchers with the little skids, not the wheels."
"Why would I invent anything anyway?"
"For attention?"
"I don't like attention."
"Everyone likes attention, especially retired cops. It's a recognized pathology. You try to insinuate yourselves back into the action."
"Are you going to do that when you retire?"
"I hope not."
"I don't either."
"So what's going on over there?"
"Maybe the kid was local," Reacher said. "They knew who he was, so he wasn't a candidate for your missing persons inquiry." Vaughn shook her head.
"Still makes no sense. Any unexplained death out of doors has got to be reported to the county coroner, in which case it would have showed up on the state system purely as a statistic. The state police would have said, 'Well, hey, we heard there was a dead guy in Despair this morning. Maybe you should check it out.'"
"But they didn't."
"Because nothing has been called in from Despair. Which just doesn't add up. What the hell are they doing with the corpse? There's no morgue over there. Not even any cold storage, as far as I know. Not even a meat locker."
"So they're doing something else with him," Reacher said.
"Like what?"
"Burying him, probably."
"He wasn't roadkill."
"Maybe they're covering something up."
"You claim he died of natural causes."
"He did," Reacher said. "From wandering through the scrub for days. Maybe because they ran him out of town. Which might embarrass them. Always assuming they're capable of embarrassment."
Vaughn shook her head again.
"They didn't run him out of town. We didn't get a call. And they always call us. Always. Then they drive them to the line and dump them. This week there's been you and the girl, that's all."
"They never dumped them to the west?"
"There's nothing there. It's unincorporated land."
"Maybe they're just slow. Maybe they'll call it in later."
"Doesn't compute," Vaughn said. "You find a dead one, you put one hand on your gun and the other on your radio. You call for backup. You call for the ambulance. You call the coroner. 1, 2, 3. It's completely automatic. There and then."
"Maybe they aren't as professional as you."
"It's not about being unprofessional. It's about making a spur-of-the-moment decision to break procedure and not to call the coroner, which would require some kind of real reason."
Reacher said nothing.
Vaughn said, "Maybe there were no cops involved. Maybe someone else found him."
"Civilians don't carry stretchers in their cars," Reacher said.
Vaughn nodded vaguely and got up, said,
We should get out of here before the day guy gets in, and the watch commander.
Embarrassed to be seen with me?
A little. And I'm a little embarrassed that I don't know what to do.
The breakfast rush at the diner was over. A degree of calm had been restored. Reacher ordered coffee. Vaughn said she was happy with tap water. She sipped her way through half a glass and drummed her fingers on the table.
Start over, she said. Who was this guy?
Caucasian male.
Not Hispanic, not foreign?
I think Hispanics are Caucasians, technically. Plus Arabs and some Asians. All I'm going on is his hair. He wasn't black, that's all I know for sure. He could have been from anywhere in the world.
Dark-skinned or pale?
I couldn't see anything.
You should have taken a flashlight.
I'm still glad I didn't.
How did his skin feel?
Feel? It felt like skin.
You should have been able to tell something. Olive skin feels different from pale skin, a little smoother and thicker.
Really?
I think so. Don't you?
Reacher touched the inside of his left wrist with his right forefinger. Then he tried his cheek under his eye.
Hard to tell.
Vaughn stretched her arm across the table.
Now compare.
He touched the inside of her wrist gently. She said,
Now try my face.
Really?
Purely for research purposes.
He paused a beat, then touched her cheek with the ball of his thumb. He took his hand away and said,
Texture was thicker than either one of us. Smoothness was somewhere between the two of us.
Okay.
She touched her own wrist where he had touched it, and then her face. Then she said,
Give me your wrist.
He slid his hand across the table. She touched his wrist with two fingers like she was taking his pulse. She rubbed an inch north and an inch south, and then leaned over and touched his cheek with her other hand. Her fingertips were cold from her water glass, and the touch startled him. He felt a tiny jolt of voltage in it. She said,
So he wasn't necessarily white, but he was younger than you. Less lined and wrinkled and weather-beaten, less of a mess.
Thank you.
You should use a good moisturizer.
I'll bear that advice in mind.
And sunscreen.
Likewise.
Do you smoke?
I used to.
That's not good for your skin either.
Reacher said,
He might have been Asian, with the skimpy beard.
Cheekbones?
Pronounced. But he was thin anyway.
Wasted, in fact.
Noticeably. But he was probably wiry to begin with.
How long does it take for a wiry person to get wasted?
I don't know for sure. Maybe 5 or 6 days in a hospital bed or a cell if you're sick or on a hunger strike. Less if you're moving about out of doors, keeping warm, burning energy. Maybe only 2 or 3 days.
Vaughn was quiet for a moment.
That's a lot of wandering.
We need to know why the good folks of despair put in 2 or 3 days' sustained effort to keep him out of there.
Reacher shook his head. Might be more useful to know why he was trying so hard to stay. He must have had a damn good reason.
Chapter 20 Vaughn finished her water, and Reacher finished his coffee and asked,
Can I borrow your truck?
When?
Now, while you sleep. Vaughn said,
No.
Why not?
You'll use it to go back to despair. You'll get arrested, and I'll be implicated.
Suppose I don't go back to despair.
Where else would you want to go?
I want to see what lies to the west. The dead guy must have come in that way. I'm guessing he didn't come through hope. You would have seen him and remembered him. Likewise with the girl's missing husband.
Good point. But there's not much west of despair. A lot of not much, in fact.
Got to be something.
Vaughn was quiet for a moment. Then she said,
"It's a long loop around.
You have to go back practically all the way to Kansas."
"I'll pay for the gas."
"Promise me you'll stay out of despair."
"Where's the line?"
5 miles west of the metal plant."
"Deal."
Vaughn sighed and slid her keys across the table.
"Go.
I'll walk home. I don't want you to see where I live."
The old Chevy's seat didn't go very far back. The runners were short. Reacher ended up driving with his back straight and his knees splayed, like he was at the wheel of a farm tractor. The steering was vague, and the brakes were soft. But it was better than walking. Much better, in fact. Reacher was done with walking, for a day or two at least. His first stop was his motel in Hope. His room was at the end of the row, which put Lucy Anderson in a room closer to the office. She couldn't be anywhere else. He hadn't seen any other overnight accommodation in town, and she wasn't staying with friends because they would have been with her in the diner the night before, in her hour of need. The motel had its main windows all in back. The front of the row had a repeating sequence of doors and lawn chairs and head-high, pebbled glass slits that put daylight into the bathrooms. Reacher started with the room next to his own and walked down the row, looking for the white blur of underwear drying over a tub. In his experience, women of Lucy Anderson's station and generation were very particular about personal hygiene. The 12 rooms yielded 2 possibilities. One had a larger blur than the other. Not necessarily more underwear, just bigger underwear. An older or a larger woman. Reacher knocked at the other door and stepped back and waited. A long moment later, Lucy Anderson opened up and stood in the inside shadows, warily, with one hand on the handle. Reacher said, "Hello, Lucky."
"What do you want?"
"I want to know why your husband went to despair and how he got there."
She was wearing the same sneakers and the same kind of abbreviated socks. Above them was a long expanse of leg, smooth and toned and tanned to perfection. Maybe she played soccer for UCLA. Maybe she was a varsity star. Above the expanse of leg was a pair of cut-off denims, frayed higher on the outside of her thighs than the inside, which was to say, frayed very high indeed, because the effective remaining inseam had to have been less than 3/4 inch. Above the shorts was another sweatshirt, mid-blue, with nothing written on it. She said,
"I don't want you looking for my husband."
"Why not?"
"Because I don't want you to find him."
"Why not?"
"It's obvious."
"Not to me."
"I'd like you to leave me alone now."
"You were worried about him yesterday. Today you're not."
She stepped forward into the light, just a pace, and glanced left and right beyond Reacher's shoulders. The motel's lot was empty. Nothing there, except Vaughn's old truck parked at Reacher's door. Lucy Anderson's sweatshirt was the same color as her eyes, and her eyes were full of panic.
"Just leave us alone," she said,
and stepped back into her room and closed the door. Reacher sat a spell in Vaughn's truck with a map from her door pocket. The sun was out again, and the cab was warm. In Reacher's experience, cars were always either warm or cold, like a primitive calendar. Either it was summer or winter. Either the sun came through the glass and the metal, or it didn't. The map confirmed what Vaughn had told him. He was going to have to drive a huge 3.5-sided rectangle, first east, almost all the way back to the Kansas line, then north to I-70, then west again, then south on the same highway spur the metal trucks used. Total distance, close to 200 miles. Total time, close to 4 hours. Plus 4 hours and 200 miles back, if he obeyed Vaughn's injunction to keep her truck off Despair's roads, which he planned to. probably. He pulled out of the lot and headed east, retracing the route he had